Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM. And all that is now, and all that is gone, and all that's to come, and everything under the sun is in view, but the sun is eclipsed by the moon.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to the Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM with John Dixon and myself, Ben Emmett. Good evening, John, and welcome back.
And thank you very much, and good evening, everyone.
As ever, our email address is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie, and the text and WhatsApp number is 087-179-1032. That's 087-179-1032. And you can also catch us live on the internet at dublincityfm.ie, and also as a podcast. We'll start, as ever, with what to see in the sky.
Yes.
The night sky, much as there is a night sky, but yes, we'll get to that in a moment.
We're not too far away from
the solstice.
Mid-summer. That doesn't make sense, does it? 6 months in. Seems like it's just darker all the time and raining and everything. So
time flies.
It certainly does. Now,
are you having fun?
Oh, yes. Always having fun.
Who's having fun?
Always having fun. Yep.
Tell us.
International Space Station, not in our skies. It's been here. It's gone. Disappeared at the end of May and not back in our evening skies until July the 3rd, until July the 20th. And we'll be telling you more about that as well. There are three bright planets. Well, I'm going to say bright planets to light up June's sky, the night sky, that is. Here's when and where to look. So, suppose you go outside, look up and south and to the left, and Mercury you will see magnitude 0, which is just about okay to see. They're saying it's bright, but it's not that bright. The good thing about it is it is setting about 2 hours just after sunset. Venus, on the other hand, it's the brightest at the moment. It's the one that's creeping up behind Jupiter, and pretty rapidly as well. And it's the June the 9th, I think it's going to be at its closest to. But if you watch it, and I have been watching it,
yep, and Tuesday the 9th, they'd be less than 2 degrees apart.
Yeah, it is only a finger at arm's length.
One or two fingertips at arm's length, yeah.
There we go. And Mars, unfortunately, too close to the Sun to be seen this particular week. Jupiter, minus 1.8 in Gemini at the moment. It was the one that dominated the evening skies all over the new year and into the summer. But now it's been taken over by Venus, which is much, much brighter. And Jupiter, of course, the second brightest planet after Venus. It shines high in the west in twilight. So look over towards the west where the Sun is disappearing, and you'll see the two of them closing in to each other over the next week or so. And it's very noticeable. And I have noticed this. And I said, my goodness, that those two look pretty close together, are getting closer. Uranus is lost in the sunset. Neptune hides low in the sunrise. So really only the ones we have are Mercury, Venus and Jupiter of all the six of our little planets. So, and don't forget again, July the 3rd until July the 20th for the International Space Station, if you want to have a little watch as it streaks across the sky, which is a great fun thing to watch. And I didn't see it this time.
No.
At all.
Yeah, no, me neither.
I just happen to look up, just as we normally do, and we get a little...
Sometimes, you can be lucky.
Spot on, yep.
Thank you, John. Just a reminder now, tomorrow, Wednesday the 3rd, you'll see Jupiter, Venus and Mercury. They'll be within 20 degrees in the northwestern sky. A bit of an arc there. Well, you can't miss Venus, and to its left will be Jupiter, and lower down to the right will be Mercury. That's the difficult one to catch, as you mentioned. And they'll be about 20 degrees apart, which is about two fist widths, or if you extend your thumb and little finger as far as you can apart from each other at arm's length, that's about 20 degrees, because one fist width is about 10 degrees. So you'll see those within that distance. So that's a good pointer for Jupiter, and certainly for Mercury. Friday the 5th is World Environmental Day. Every day should be World Environmental Day, but it's another story. And on Sunday the 7th, you see Jupiter, Venus, as you mentioned, John, they'll be getting closer together, and the two stars above them, nearby. That's Castor and Pollux. And as we mentioned, Tuesday the 9th, Venus and Jupiter are less than 2 degrees apart. Now the moon, we have a 95% wane in Gibbous moon. It's not above our horizon at the moment. It will rise just after midnight tonight. And will be due south about half past three in the morning. And when it sets tomorrow morning, just before 7 a.m, it'll be just down to a 92% waning gibbous moon. So we get smaller and smaller as we head towards the third quarter moon, which will be on Monday the 8th at 1 a.m. And the sun rises tomorrow in Dublin at 5:02 a.m, 6 minutes earlier than a week ago. Local or solar noon, and the sun is at its highest in due south. That's at 1:23 p.m. And then the sun sets 9:45 p.m. 9 minutes later than a week ago. And then we'll have civil twilight until 10:35 p.m. Then nautical twilight ending at 11:57 p.m. That's 3 minutes before midnight, where we go into astronomical twilight, which we'll have for the rest of the night, about 3 or 4 hours before we're back into nautical twilight. So the sky never gets quite pitch dark like it does in the winter. So what does that mean? 1 minute and 55 seconds more daylight than today is what we'll have tomorrow, when there'll be 16 hours and 43 minutes between sunrise and sunset. That's 15 minutes more daylight than a week ago. You see that figure is getting smaller and smaller. The rate of change is slowing down as we near the solstice, which is in about 3 weeks, just under 20 days or 19 days' time.
Yeah.
As you allude to. Ooh. And then there's, well, we won't talk about what happens then. But it'll be good news if you're a deep sky observer.
A star watcher, indeed, yes.
For sure.
God of Chaos, otherwise known as Asteroid Apophis. This is another date for your diary. Not to be missed, this particular one. It's going to blaze across our sky on April the 13th in 2029. We're going to keep reminding you of this, and this is why it's a once-in-a-lifetime event well worth travelling for. This is the rare stargazing spectacle, which will unfold on a Friday this time, April the 13th. So Friday the 13th, 2029, easy one to remember, as the asteroid Apophis passes closer than satellites over Europe and Africa in a true once-in-a-lifetime event. So it's a rare naked-eye asteroid, and it'll pass Earth, making an extraordinarily close flyby. For sky watchers, it's the one worth travelling for. The Sahara cools, of course, fast after sunset, and April stars come out quickly. One by one, the stars appear. Leo the Lion stretching across the southern sky towards Gemini. We mentioned them earlier on, the twins, Castor and Pollux, and then we have M44 and loads of things. So lots of things to look forward to. I suppose the Sahara is the place to really go, and I've been there. And the night sky just lights up. It's incredible to see it in a sun-free, unpolluted sky as well, just to see the Milky Way and everything else is fantastic. So put that date in one's diary for...
And that's the asteroid Apophis that a few years ago we weren't sure whether it was going to actually hit the Earth on that date, until there was a few more tracking observations done on it and the calculations were refined. And we said, whew, well, it's not going to hit us.
Well, I think we have the technology now, if it did decide that it was going to make a little track towards us, that we'd be able to go up and intercept it and just nudge it out of the way for another how many years.
So, and I think it'll be back around in 2035, isn't it?
2035.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Pretty good.
Yeah. There you go. So it's... I'm going to be watching out for that one anyway, if we can see another cloudy.
Hopefully we'll have a clear sky wherever we are. John, did you see... Bezos' Blue Origin spacecraft hit the mainstream news as well. I don't know whether I saw the video, and the short video. I think I saw it on the BBC website. They were doing a test firing the rocket, but unfortunately things didn't go too well and caused a lot of damage to the pad that Blue Origin Jeff Bezos and co. Rent from NASA, and they there's also a satellite. Did you see the satellite picture from space? You could see the charred area. There's a massive fireball. It was very spectacular, if you can check it. I'm sure it's on YouTube and maybe still on the BBC website. But it's well worth if you want to see a massive explosion. It didn't go according to plan, but I don't know, do you have some more details on it there?
It's put NASA's plans to go to the moon back a little bit, is what they're saying. And there are incredible videos to show how the Blue Origin rocket exploded, and it could be seen from hundreds of miles away, even hundreds of miles straight up in space from the International Space Station. And I have seen a photograph, and the technology for taking ground-based photographs is brilliant. So you can see the devastation that it caused. So I'm not sure exactly what caused this. I don't know whether you saw it, Ben.
The investigation is yet to begin, but it certainly has, or maybe it has begun with the help of NASA, but they haven't yet determined what actually caused the big mishap. But certainly some massive explosion, that's for sure. And as I mentioned, you could see it from space.
From space, that's right, yeah. It's well worth a watch. There are loads of videos still around to show it over and over if you want to watch it. Although, not really. I know it's spectacular and all that, but it's not the sort of thing that we want to see ever, I suppose.
No. Yeah. Thankfully, nobody was hurt, of course, which is obviously good news. But as you mentioned, that's... And a variation of that is designed to help build the gateway, isn't it? Space station, or the small lunar gateway space station, and also help with the missions to the moon. So it's hard to know how far that will set them back, and if it'll set back the planned lunar landing of Artemis 4 in 2028. Is yet to be decided, I suppose. Mm. Yeah.
Let's go back to 50 years. We've mentioned this a couple of weeks back as well. NASA's Twin Voyager spacecraft, very low on power at the moment because they've lost, I suppose, the solar energy because they're in, what do we call it, hyperspace, whatever you want to call it. And they've got a little... battery. We call it a battery.
It's a little nuclear reactor generating the energy to send back signals because it's so far from the sun. Yeah. Just solar panels just wouldn't work.
And we did mention how long it takes for a signal to get there and back. It's almost
a day, isn't it? 22 hours there.
Yeah, and same again, back again.
Yeah.
And hurtling away from us at 40,000 miles per hour. Something not to forget. I'd like to keep my little eye on this just to see. Because one day it'll just disappear. Or the two of them, should I say, will disappear. And never to be seen again unless some little fella out, way out in the far corners of space, will get to see this and say, what was that? 40,000 miles an hour going.
Still going. Yeah. Every second of every day.
Yeah.
Thank you, John. You're listening to The Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM with John Dixon and Ben Emmett. And our email address is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie. And the text and WhatsApp number is 087-179-1032. That's 087-179-1032. And you can also catch us live on the internet at astronomy.dublincityfm.ie and also as a podcast. Now, I know one of your favourite subjects, John, is... space junk, and we're going to talk about how space weather and solar activity affects space junk, how it affects the Earth's atmosphere, and how that affects space junk itself. But going back to something that also affected re-entry of the Skylab, you remember the American United States Skylab was their first space station. It was launched in 1973. It had three crews on board at various stages before it was left empty. It was a big object. Its mass at re-entry was about 77 tons. It was never designed to return back to Earth, but by the late 70s, the orbit was decaying faster than expected, and they think this has got to do with high solar activity. And although they had planned to dump it or crash it into the Indian Ocean, where a lot of spacecraft are aimed for, the trajectory didn't go quite right. It didn't re-enter as soon as it was calculated to. So all the debris, as it broke up, went a bit further west. And some of it landed in Western Australia. And there was one town out there called Esperance, mm-hmm. where it fell, or at least some of it fell. And as a joke, apparently, the local council sent a litter fine to NASA for $400, which was the standard fine for dumping. And if you left some domestic rubbish or a mattress or whatever it was. So they say it was all part of a joke and a bit of a legend in the town, just to make the town famous. But they also, there was, I'm not sure whether it was NASA or one of the TV stations or radio stations in the States then offered, was it the paper, the San Francisco Examiner, they'd offered $10,000, $10,000 to the first person to deliver a piece of Skylab back to its office. So a 17-year-old who worked on a farm there, or I think he lived on the family farm, big chunk of a fell there, and he packed it off, hopped on the plane, went to San Francisco and said, here you go, here's some of Skylab. Can I have my $10,000, please? Yeah. Which they did.
They did, very good.
But the other part of the interesting story is, of course, NASA never paid the $400 fine, but it was and it was 30 years later, which was 2009, an American radio host by the name of Scott Barley of a California station, he raised $400 from his listeners, mm-hmm. paid the fine, and they sent off the $400.
Very good. Now, dollars in Australian dollars or US dollars?
They were 400 US dollars, I think. But anyway, as a bit of a laugh, I suppose, continued the joke, some of his with him and his listeners, and they raised $400 and sent it off to the town of Esperance to pay the fine. And that concludes that story. But that leads nicely into your piece about space weather and space junk, how it affects space junk.
It's incredible. Just before I do, I want to say hi to Aaron just for his text.
Thank you, Aaron, and for your earlier text.
And good to hear see me back. So they do miss me when I'm gone just for a week. Please say hi to my friend Dave, and he may be listening in also in Tala. So very good evening to you. Thanks,
Dave and Alan. Aaron, I should say.
We've been watching space junk for over 20 years now at this stage, since the start of our programming of the Astronomy Show. And it can be anything from flecks of paint to rocket boosters and all sorts of things, and a lot of them stay up a little bit longer. At the moment, probably 20,000 or more of pieces 10 cm or bigger. And they do, of course, log all the rest of them. So there is quite a number, or should I say, quite a number of bits and pieces floating around in space. Now, a lot of them do come back, including some of the shoebox-sized satellites that they send up in Starlinks and things like that. So there's always a constant turnaround and burn-up of satellites coming back into our atmosphere. And who knows whether some of those are actually meteorites or satellites coming back in. It doesn't really matter. Light pollution is another big thing that plays its game as well. And for people like us who like to watch in the sky, and it's something that is becoming very, I suppose, unpopular is space junk. And if you watch the maps on the internet, it's how things don't hit each other more often, I don't know. They say space is massive. Of course it is. But when you're dealing with sort of up to, say, 250 miles above our head, when there are thousands of these. Now, if I don't know whether you do this a lot, but I certainly do want to go out in the evening, put the bins out and things like that. You look up, first thing you see are satellites going in all different directions across the skies.
Yeah, little lights moving steadily across the sky.
Like aeroplanes without the flashy bits. And they're in all directions. How they don't sort of make more collisions into bits and pieces that are floating out there. Now, the odd time you do get like a defunct, was it a Russian one? A number of years back, hit a line.
And the problem with that is then they break into two pieces, become hundreds or maybe thousands of pieces.
And they're still floating around up there as well. But what's happening now is that they're saying now that solar activity makes space junk crash to Earth faster. And this observation expected to be the key for planning sustainable space operations in the future. Every time you send a rocket up, there are bits and pieces of everything flying around the place. And the growing debris field in orbit today may someday endanger our access to the stars. And here is the figure of everything from flecks of paint all the way up. So the field consists of nearly 130 million pieces of space junk, dead satellites, old rocket bodies, tiny fragments generated by on-orbit collisions, which doesn't happen that often, but thank goodness, but it does. And understanding how debris shifts in orbit can help avoid disastrous collisions. And this is where all the new studies are coming from. But seemingly, the solar activity, that's the solar wind, as it hits, as they get with these bigger and stronger, I suppose, sunspots and things, that you get them a few days later, they start to push the space junk back into Earth's orbit a lot quicker.
I think it affects the Earth's atmosphere too. It causes it maybe to expand, which will increase drag as well.
Yeah,
and that would affect it too.
Yeah.
I'm not mistaken?
No, you're not mistaken. And I was going to come to that point, but you got there before me. It's quite all right. So, the next time there's a solar flare, more space junk comes down quicker. And so with a bit of luck, a lot will come down a lot quicker as well. So what are they going to do? There's rocket launches nearly every single day now.
Yep.
This is amazing. Yeah.
Thank you, John. Now, was it the biggest telescope ever built? The James Webb? Mm-hmm. It is the largest, most powerful telescope ever launched into space. European Space Agency provided the telescope's launch service with an Ariane 5 and provided lots of instruments on it, including the NIR spec or the near infrared spectrometer, and also, of course, NASA. It's basically an international partnership between NASA, ESA, and the Canadian Space Agency. But the point I wanted to make was Webb has discovered it has looked at and mapped the motion and composition of gas orbiting a black hole in the center of a small galaxy, which has one of those strange names. It's actually ABEL-2744-QS01. But we'll just call it, for the moment, a tiny galaxy. It's more than 13 billion light years away. Now, looking at this, the results of their study suggest that a 50 million solar mass black hole predates the galaxy. Now, until recently, we always assumed that the general thinking was that black holes formed from the collapse of massive stars. And the stars, of course, form from gravitational collapse of massive clouds of dust and gas. And the whole thing would take billions of years, or certainly hundreds of millions of years. And it's only after that, when the star dies, the big stars would die, that some of them, if they're big enough, would turn into black holes or neutron stars, and they would collide and they'd feed on each other. But this massive, supermassive black hole, they call it, seems to be bigger than, or older than, the galaxy it's in. And they think, because the galaxy itself is 13 billion light years away, and therefore we're seeing it as it was 13 billion years ago, which was only a few hundred million years after the Big Bang, when the universe and time and the laws of physics and maths and everything we know as we know them came into being, that this particular supermassive black hole may have even formed within 1 second after the Big Bang, which is, so there was obviously so much material, but we know actually 1 second after the Big Bang everything was so dense that maybe that's, when you think about it, not impossible for it to happen. But it seems to be the case. The other odd thing about this, it's a very, this small galaxy. It's only 1,300 light years across, and the ratio of the mass, the supermassive black hole in the middle of it takes up something like 40 or 60% of the mass of the whole galaxy, whereas usually the mass of a black hole in a galaxy, like the one in there, would be a fraction of the mass of the entire galaxy. So it is a very strange anomaly from that point of view, and I think that maybe it doesn't appear that this one formed like other black holes, that it actually formed straight from clouds of gas and dust. Also, the galaxy itself that's it's in, there's very little, it's mostly hydrogen and helium and very little other heavier elements, which suggests that there was no other, I suppose, older stars in it that collapsed.
Mm-hmm.
It's strange, billions.
It's one of the weird things in looking back in time. And one thing that's always baffled me, and I try and confuse as many people as I possibly can. The Big Bang was, what, many billion years ago?
13.7 or 13.8.
Yeah, well, which was it?
Does it matter?
No, it doesn't. But, and we're here now, this 13 point whatever, billion years later, but still we're able to see back in time.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep.
That's so because it takes the light, the 13, from this particular galaxy, 13 billion years to reach us.
Yeah, but we're here now, and it was then.
Yes.
It's all to do with wavelength speeds.
Well, yeah. The speed of life. We when we look at the moon, we see it as it was 1.25 seconds ago. Look at the sun, we see it as it was just over 8 minutes ago.
Mm-hmm.
And if you could see your friend Voyager out there,
yeah,
you'd see it as it was 22 hours ago.
Yeah.
So
it just baffles a lot of people.
And the Andromeda Galaxy? You see it as it was over 2 million years ago.
And may I say that we're hurtling towards each other at 350,000 miles per hour at one stage in 2 odd million years' time.
We're
going to collide. And when I say collide, we're not actually going to collide. You might get an odd a planet or two. But the things like the Andromeda Galaxy and the Milky Way Galaxy are just so massive. There's going to be very, very little collision involved. And you might get a certain spiral of magnetic pulls and pushes and twists, and goodness knows what it'll form.
There's some lovely pictures on the internet of galaxies that have collided. You can see the gravitational and how it has affected their shape gravitationally as they move. But it's like two clouds of gas or something moving into each other. The chances of two actual stars directly colliding with each other are very remote.
Mm-hmm.
But the whole thing, the overall gravitational force that will cause one to move through the other and then kind of spring back and forth and then eventually come to some type of stable arrangement over billions of years.
Yeah. Why is the sky blue?
Well, that's an easy one to answer.
Yeah.
Would we do that now?
No, well, we could. We've about 30 seconds, I suppose, yeah.
Okay, we'll try and do it 30 seconds. Okay, well, the light from the sun is made up of different wavelengths. Yeah. We see it as, you know, we've seen the rainbow, the colours of the rainbow, and this most of the light from the sun will come straight through the atmosphere and into our eyes, so we see it.
But the
blue light from the sun, basically, it will bounce around the sky and the atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
It's reflected and deflected throughout the atmosphere. And so we see that blue light coming to us from all, from every area of it, assuming the sky is clear.
Yeah, it has a short.
You will see all that blue light, which has come from the sun. So the sky appears
blue,
but it's only the blue light from the sun just bouncing around the atmosphere and up and down across before it,
because
it hits your eye.
Short wavelengths, and we see it first.
Yeah.
And on that note,
that's it.
We're having fun, huh?
Time flies when you're having fun. Okay, John, thank you for that, for your news items, and for driving the sound desk this evening. That's all from us here, and from this edition of the Astronomy Show. It's music all the way now until 2 a.m. here on 103.2 Dublin City FM. Up next is Dublin's Greatest Hits from 10 p.m. to midnight. Nigel Wood has his ear to the globe with his world music mix, and from midnight till 2 a.m. Dave Barry's mix of jazz, blues and soul. But please join myself and John at the same time, 7:30 p.m. next week. We'll be back with all the latest news from all corners and dimensions of the universe. Until then, thank you. Thank you for listening. Say goodnight, John.
Good night, John.
Good night, John.
Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM.